Blog Talk Radio.
Positive people, people.
Of our world,
Darkness has always been followed by sunrise. Death has always been followed by renewal of life. Loss has always been accompanied in some way by a restoral of abundance. Let us pray. Divine Source, by whatever name you are known, we come before you this morning trusting in the promises of life, of abundance, of resurrection and renewal. We trustingly place our hope and our faith in you by whatever name we call you. For in the end, there is but one source. There is but one eternal heavenly master, one energy behind all of creation, behind all the universes that we can see, and all the myriad number of universes which we cannot see. We know that yours is the mind behind it all, the heavenly eternal, he, she, and it, who is known in a multitude of ways and by a multitude of names. We come before you this morning. So let it be. Isaiah from the 24th chapter. On his mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all the peoples, from all nations, from all tongues, from all races. A banquet of aged wine, the best of meats, and the finest of wines. On his mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The Sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove the disgrace of his people from all the earth. The Lord, the Source, has spoken. Psalm 15. Lord, who may dwell in your sanctuary? Who may live on your holy mountain? The one whose walk is blameless, and who does what is righteous, who speaks the truth from his heart, and has no slander on his tongue, who does his neighbor no wrong, and casts no slur on his fellow human being, who despises a vile man, but honors those who respect the Lord, who keeps his oath, even when it is costly to do so, who lends money without interest, and does not accept a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be shaken.
Thank you.
Our Easter reading this morning is taken from the Gospel according to Mark, the 16th chapter. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll away the stone from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go tell his disciples and Peter. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. And here ends the earliest version of the Gospel of Mark. I like that Gospel reading pertaining to the resurrection of Jesus because it leaves you kind of hanging. It doesn't wrap the story up nice and neat like later Gospels do. Scholars believe that the Gospel according to Mark, 16th chapter, ending at that verse where I ended the reading today, is probably the earliest reading, the earliest version of that gospel. It didn't have the story of the apostles meeting Jesus and Jesus talking to his disciples. That was left up in the air. The original version of that gospel stops with, "They were afraid, and they ran, and they said nothing to anyone." And that is the way I think that we would feel, and do feel, when we are confronted with something strange, something which challenges our preconceived notions and our ideas so strongly as the witness to the resurrection of somebody from the dead. In Christian thought, the prime example of resurrection from the dead is Jesus, rising from the tomb after the crucifixion. But if we look with eyes wide open at the totality of human history, and even from our own experiences, we can see other examples of resurrection from the dead. When I was at my first pastorate, I was serving a church of, well, it started out of about 30 people, and then later expanded to about 100. But it was a church in a retirement area. It was a church at that time that considered itself a retirement church. At the age of 45 years of age, I was the baby of the church, just about. The average age was 68. And we had a lot of folks there who were in their 70s and 80s and 90s. We even had folks who lived up into their hundreds. But when you have an elderly congregation like that, a new pastor quickly learns what he must become good at. I thought when I first became a pastor that my biggest challenge would be weddings. But in that congregation, I did not have much of a chance to practice up on weddings. I did, however, get a lot of practice doing funerals. And not just any funerals, but funerals for folks that I'd come to know, come to love over many years, whose funeral, as pastor, I was called upon to officiate. And this was part of my awakening experience. We had funerals about every 2 or 3 weeks. That's a slight exaggeration. About once a month we would have a funeral. Now, sometimes when things were going pretty well or I thought we were on a pretty good roll, I wouldn't have a funeral to do for about 3 months at a time. And those were blessed times, I thought. But for the most part, on average, about once every month, I knew I'd be called upon to do the funeral of somebody I'd come to know and love within that congregation. And after being exposed to that level of death and separation, coming to know these people and doing their funerals, something else began to make itself very obvious. After we buried some of these folks from the church, some of them refused to simply pass away into the night, as it were. Some of them refused to go away, and these were folks that I had come to know and love, who were very close, very dear friends. And at first I was a little surprised when my first dear friend, who was a lady, died suddenly of a heart attack after being hit in the chest with an airbag. She was in her 80s at that time. And she came back to me in a dream. And this was really strange because this was before I was called upon to become the pastor of that church. And it was during a time when I had spent about 2 or 3 weeks not going to church. And when I had this dream, this lady appeared to me telling me to get back to church, that something important was happening there, and I needed to be a part of it. And when I had this dream, I did not know that this lady had died. And the next Sunday was just 2 days away, so I walked into church expecting to see this lady. And I was going to tell her about this crazy dream I had about her. And I walked into the church and noticed that this lady's family was all very quiet. I walked up to our pastor who was serving the church at that time. And I asked him where she was. And he looked at me and said, "She died. She died 3 days ago." And I put two and two together and realized that she had died the day before I had that dream in which she appeared to me and spoke to me rather bluntly about what I had been up to, what I needed to be up to, and the fact that I needed to get reinvolved in that place of worship. And I didn't tell the family about the dream. At that time, I didn't tell anybody about the dream because it was just so darned odd. Matter of fact, you might say that like the ladies at the tomb who were witnesses, the first witnesses to the resurrection of Jesus, I wasn't really afraid, but I was definitely startled because I realized something weird was going on, something wonderful, but also something very weird. Because in our training, in our culture, in our Western culture, we are taught that death is the end. I mean, that's it. It's over. You know, no second chances. Some folks say that there's no life beyond the grave, that you're just meat for the worms. And we hold to these views very dogmatically because it's what we're raised with, and so it seems to fit our experiences. But when something odd like that happens, you know that that training from early childhood is not necessarily true. There is life after the grave, and the separation that we experience is not always eternal. That veil, that sheath, as it is called in the reading from Isaiah, that can be transcended, if only briefly, in this life. And communication is definitely possible. Our loved ones who pass on are separated. separated from us, but not in an eternal sense. And they are not dead. They are just simply ascended to a new form of life eternal, a way of life which is dramatically, I don't know what to say, superior is not really the right word, but dramatically more abundant than the life that we normally experience on this ball we call the earth. Now, unlike the ladies at the tomb, or perhaps like the ladies at the tomb, after a few years, after I became pastor of that church, we were having a reading. I believe it was around Easter time, about life and death and resurrection. And at that time, teaching the adult Bible study, I decided that I was going to take a chance. And I was going to speak about that experience that I had with that one church lady. I noticed her survivors were not in that Sunday school. So I thought, okay, this would be a good time to share with the rest of the congregation a little piece of this story. And so I did. Told them about how Willa, that was her name, appeared to me in a dream. About one day after she died, spoke to me and told me, basically, it's time to get your act together and get back active in that congregation. And a lot of people looked at me, kind of weird. And one old pastor looked at me, and he didn't know really what to say. He asked a few questions. He ultimately was supportive of what I had to say. He disagreed with the timing and how I chose to say it, but he said, yes, we as Christians do believe in life after death, and it's not just Christians either. It's a wide variety of people who believe in life after death. And he also said that, you know, it's not wrong to speak of these experiences. Just be very careful when you speak of them. And after I gave that Sunday school lesson and shared that experience about this lady that spoke to me after she had died, I was approached by two other members of our congregation. They both said it was a wonderful Sunday school, and then they said, now, I thought, I'm going to share this with you because I thought when I had the original experiences, if I ever told anybody else, they would think I was crazy. And that's how they both, these two ladies separately, introduced themselves and what they had to say. And one of these ladies shared with me the experience of how she had lost her daughter to cancer many years previously. And this lady had been devastated by the loss of her daughter. She was in the prime of her life. I think she said she was in her 20s, thinking about getting married. And then the cancer came and took her down within the matter of a few months. And she died. And when this lady lost her daughter to cancer, she went through a period of being very angry at God. She could not let go of the memory of her daughter. She could not let go of her daughter. And she blamed God for robbing her of the pride and joy in her life, taking away her daughter at such an early age. And she went through a year of just being angry. You might say just being pissed at God. And then after 1 year on the anniversary of her daughter's death, this lady went to visit the graveside. And she took with her the flowers, and she laid them at the tomb. And she cried. And she was in such a deep state of despair. And then suddenly she looked up. And standing by the gravestone was her daughter. But it wasn't the image of her daughter as she had been in life, withering away and dying of cancer, her last memories of her daughter. This was a image of her daughter that she saw, vibrant, happy, and full of life. And this lady related to me how her daughter looked at her and said, "Mom, don't despair. Be happy. I'm okay. I'm alive. You buried my body, but I live on." And she went on encouraging her mother and assuring her that death was not the end. And the greatest pain that the daughter felt at that point in time, she said, was the sorrow of her mother still mourning her loss after 1 year. And she said, "Mom, you don't realize the amount of pain you're causing me by continuing to mourn. You know, celebrate. Be happy. I'm alive. I'm well. I'm separated, but I'm alive. I'm well, and we will reunite sometime in the future. Not soon, but sometime in the future." And that apparition experience gave that lady the strength to finally let go of that old pain, of that old separation, and gave her the hope, the real hope, that this thing we call death is not the end. It's just, we might think of it as a new beginning, a time of transitioning, and it's a painful time of transitioning. Even those of us who firmly believe in life after death, when we experience the death of a loved one, it still hurts. And even as I was relating that story to you about how that mother lost her daughter and felt the pain of separation so keenly, I was wiping back a few tears. I didn't think I would. This is an old story for me. I've had a lot of time to contemplate it, to get it through my head and my heart. But the pain of death still hurts, even for those of us who think of ourselves as becoming enlightened, or at least more awake than your average Joe. It still hurts. And I think that's a good thing. But there comes a time when we have to let go of that pain of separation and realize that our loved ones have gone on to a better world. Now, that sounds like a cliche, I know. But they have gone on to a better place. And from my other experiences I have had, coming into contact with folks who have passed on, and I want to make it clear at this point in time, I don't do seances. I'm not advertising seances. My experiences happen when the folks on the other side decide they want to say something. I have very little control over it. Over the years, I've just learned that when I make contact with these folks that have passed on, it behooves me to listen, pay attention, and be aware. But from my experiences that I've had, making contact or having them make contact with me, I know that life beyond the veil, beyond the grave, is actually not death as we know it. To them, they're not dead. They're super alive. You know, they experience a form of life in which all the senses are sharpened, which they can see more clearly and with more vibrant colors. They can hear more distinctly. They can focus their attention on where they want to go, and they're there just in the blink of an eye. To them, they're not dead. I mean, they're super alive. They're ultra alive. To them, those who have passed on, It's not a cause for mourning. I mean, they don't mourn for themselves, by and large. Sometimes they do. I mean, if they still feel attached to this earthly life, and when death came, they weren't ready for it. But for the most part, when death came at the right time, and they were ready, and they were prepared, for them, it is a rebirth, a being born again type of experience. And their only mourning is for us on the other side of the veil. And I had one lady tell me after her experiences coming into contact with folks from beyond the veil, she told me that to them, we are the ones who are dead. They are the ones who are alive. So our whole definition of life and death and rebirth, it's not always what we think. We have to challenge our preconceived notions. We have to learn to open our eyes to the fact that there is more to life than what we see on this side of the veil, and that there are wonderful experiences that still await us. We can think of this earthly life and how some people seem to get cheated in this earthly life. They don't have all the breaks. They suffer greatly. And we may think that if God is a just, kind, loving God, then why is it that so many have so little and so few have so much when it comes to earthly resources, wealth, and abundance? And we may think how unfair it is that this life should be so tilted over in the wrong direction. And if we believe that this is all there is, then yes, this is a grave injustice. If this was your one shot at life, your one shot at getting it right, your one shot of being rewarded by the Almighty for your piety, for your goodness, and instead of being rewarded, you get trashed by your fellows and by the world around you, then yes, I think asking about the justice of God and questioning the justice of God is the right course of action. But if we recognize that this earthly life is just less than 1% of the totality of life, that this is just the beginning, this is just the kindergarten class in life eternal. The bigger and better things are things yet to come. Then we can come to understand that, yes, there is hope, that there is a better life awaiting, and that death is not the end. Death, when it comes at its proper time. When talking about death, I'm usually pretty careful to say death isn't that bad, but still it's not something to be rushed into. I am not advocating suicide. Death will come in its natural course. We are not to rush it unless we have very darn good reason for doing so. But at the end of a life well lived, death will bring its reward. Death will result in a rebirth, a graduation into a new phase of life which will fill us with awe when that moment comes. We can catch a glimpse of this by being awake and aware, paying attention to the things around you, looking at the cycles of nature. Right now we're into springtime. The sun is now rising where I am at. And the birds are singing. We just had a dark and cold night. We're getting over that now. The warmth of the sun is coming back. Winter gives way to spring. Spring gives way to summer. Summer has its new life and new blooms, new flowers, new gardens. And then after summer, fall comes and nature seems to die. And then winter, when nature seems to be dead, but it's not dead. It's just fallen asleep, awaiting the warmth of spring when it will once again reawaken and come forth in full bloom and in full glory, revealing that life is an eternal cycle. We are trained to think that death is the end, but the prophets from all different traditions from the millennia on down to the present day have reminded us that death is not the end. One prophetic voice asks, O death, where is thy victory? O death, where is thy sting? Where? Well, that pain, that sorrow is all swallowed up in the glorious realization of rebirth and resurrection. As people who are awakening, people who are aware that there is more to life than what we can see and hear and touch. Let us open our hearts to feel and to feel deeply the other side of life, to open ourselves up to the author of creation, who creates out of eternal living energy, the eternal living energy which makes up you and I and everything around us, an energy which can only be transformed, but which never can be destroyed. And let us place our hope in the goodness of that energy and trust that we are never alone. Though we may feel the pain of separation and feel it keenly from time to time, we are never alone. And when we open our hearts up to the eternal source, we find that we are still connected, even though all physical barriers have been destroyed or all physical connections have been destroyed. If we see beyond the physical barrier, we can tap in to that life eternal and celebrate new life and resurrection. Good people, thank you for listening. Thank you for participating. In future broadcasts, I am going to include a brief moment for prayer. And I will open up the phone lines for folks that want to call in with their prayer concerns. We'll do that next week. Right now, I'd like to leave you with a little song by Celtic Reggae Revival, You've Got to Laugh. Wishing you a blessed day of spiritual discovery. Get out there and have a beautiful Easter and a wonderful springtime experience.
No matter what you see, you know you gotta stay true, 'cause you know we always do the best we can. When the times get tough and you feel a little rough, you hold on, you know it will come. The soul of suffering in the world we're living in, and that's the way it's always been. So don't let it bring you down. We got a lot.
service and our temple, check out our website at www.hermetictemple.com. Until later, this is Fred or Ralph, wishing you blessings abundant.